Welcome to the Cold Fusion Muse podcast. It's been some time since I had a podcast, over a year. It's not that I haven't had anything to say. I've been updating the blog regularly during that time, but the roles in my company and my the number of staff and so on had changed pretty dramatically over the last year as we grew and restructured and so on. So very difficult for me to get around to actually producing a podcast that that was organized in a way that, you know, was of any use to anybody. So I do have such a post today, and I want to share it with you. It's called Great Expectations, How to Make Money on the Web. Now, this post comes about from some high-level experiences that I have over the last several years as a company owner and as a business manager and as someone who tends to write proposals for applications, estimating and costs and standing up new businesses and startups. We do that quite a lot, and we have a number of applications under our belt that are built as web-based service applications that companies are built around, intending to make money on, you know, on the applications that we've built on their behalf. So during that time, we've learned a number of lessons and come across a number of principles that have helped us to fully advise our customers and to really help them come to grips with the kinds of issues that they're going to face if they're going to create a application that truly works on the web and is capable of providing them with an income. So I'd say at this point in my company, about two or three times a month, I have a potential customer in my office, someone with an idea, a vision, an application, a business plan, someone who intends to finance the development of some sort of online tool to make money on the web. And that is an interesting experience for me. Some of these ideas are unique and some are not. Some of them involve a web-based application or service that the individual wants to sell. Sometimes it's a product, a physical product. Sometimes it's information, a service, a community site. Whatever it is, this person has convinced themselves that the idea has potential and has the potential to become a thriving and a profitable business. So they come to me for general advice and possibly to see if web tools can develop this product for them. In some cases, they are underfunded, and they ask if we would take an equity stake in the venture in lieu of some of our development fees. Up to this point, I've been tempted maybe twice, but I usually decline to do so, mostly because we need projects that are profitable and funded to meet our own business goals, and capital that we want to risk we tend to use to expand CF Web Tools, our hosting business and our CRID product and so on. But in any case, all of these ideas have something in common. Some individual or group of individuals want to leverage the web to make a big pile of money. Now, let me say at the outset, I am often amazed at the ideas that end up succeeding. CF Web Tools, you know, we've built some crackpot applications that we've looked at and we thought, my gosh, you know, I don't know how anybody would ever think that this would make a living or make money or become a successful business. And lo and behold, after launch, they take off and succeed and right out of the gate begin to be profitable and gain energy. And it's, you know, it always kind of amazes us. And on the other hand, we've built applications that we thought were startling and innovative and see them die with a whimper as soon as they're launched out of the gate. So it's very difficult, and we'll talk about the winds of fate at some point, but it's very difficult to decide what does make money and what does not make money. But I can tell you there are some very common pitfalls, some very common hurdles, obstacles that customers run into that tend to trip them up when they come to creating these applications in such a way to give them a chance. So this series is designed to help consulting companies or independent contractors assist their clients, and also to help folks that are visionary that do have a web-based idea to decide what, you know, what they need to do to make it work for them. I'm sure that unless you are a follower of you know, motivational speakers Anthony Anthony or Walter Mollusk, for those of you who are red-green fans, you'll know intuitively there's no one formula for success, but there are some obstacles that you would do well to avoid, and that's kind of what we want to address. So the first question that you have to ask is, with your new product, will you be meeting a need or will you need to create a need? Will you be meeting a need or creating a need? Now, this idea really comes from marketing. Ask yourself this question. Is there a demographic out there that is walking around saying to themselves, dang, if I only had, fill in the blank with your idea, life would be so much easier? If there is such a group that feels a compelling need for your product, then you're very fortunate and your idea has a leg up on others, especially if no one else is meeting that need. I'm reminded of Steve Martin in that movie, The Jerk. I don't know if you've ever seen that. It's pretty old. He invents a nose bridge. I can't remember what he calls it, but it takes pressure off of the bridge of the nose and puts it, you know, off the place between your eyes and puts it down on the lower part of the nose and lifts the eyeglasses up off the nose so that you don't have to, you know, so that you're not getting pressure up there on the bridge of your nose. It's kind of a silly idea, but his character managed to meet a need, you know, that people felt intuitively. And he was successful because, you know, everybody was walking around with these little pressure points on the bridge of their nose and feeling this pressure but not knowing what to do about it, and he solved that problem for them. Well, if there's such a need, you're lucky, but very often this kind of build a better mousetrap approach doesn't work. Many products, especially new, innovative products, you know, targeting the web, they're a brand new combination of ideas. They don't come with a ready-made audience, with a ready-made need that you can exploit. So success depends on your ability to tell your story, to get the word out. And that means, you know, marketing, marketing, marketing. Now you might say, hold on, it's the internet. So, you know, what I really need to do is I need to get listed highly on search engines. That's what I need to do. Well, unfortunately, that's not necessarily going to do it. Search engine optimization and targeting search engines is only going to help you if people are already kind of searching for your product. So let's say you invent a new bread slicer you want to sell over the internet. It's the greatest thing since sliced bread. So you create a site and optimize it for search engines. Ask yourself this question. Who is looking for a new way to slice bread? What if no one really needs a way to slice bread, you know, a new way to slice bread? What if they're content with the old way of slicing bread? Are there people out there that are slicing bread and thinking to themselves, gee, I wish there was a different way to slice this bread, you know? So even if you have a great product, you as a product manager, you got to find a way to create a need. You've got to let people know, hey, you need this new way of slicing bread. So a marketing plan has to be a part of the equation if you have a created need. You have to tell your story. You have to find ways of getting that story out there. So when you create your business plan and seek financing and so on, you have to account for a marketing plan and allocate enough resources to build that initial customer base. And, of course, the second question you have to ask, and this is one that you know, comes from reading too many business plans, in order for your product to succeed, is it going to have to catch fire? That's a good question. Are you depending, and what it boils down to is this, are you depending on everyone else to see your idea in the same way that you see your idea? The problem is, you know, people with vision and with these great ideas, they are also people who are positive, forward-thinking. They have faith, you know, and they fall into the trap of believing really only the positive aspects about their idea. There's an ugly cliche for this that you might have heard called drinking the Kool-Aid. It's a reference to the folks lured to their death by the charismatic cult leader Jim Jones in Jonestown. Marketing has a certain amount of, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid about it. Marketing is tasked with downplaying negatives and boosting positives. But the trick is, you as a business owner or a product manager, you can't fall into the trap of believing your own PR. So ask yourself this question. How will I feel, or what if my product is only mildly successful? Will I be satisfied with a small business that earns a living? Is it okay if the business isn't profitable for a year or so? Do I mind waiting 3 or 4 years before I can, you know, buy a Mercedes? Or do I need this idea to rocket off the pad and rise to new heights so I can sell it off to Microsoft and retire to the Hamptons? Too many plans that I see contain wildly speculative promises of a payback in the short amount of time, and people seem to always believe that if they like the idea, everyone else will respond the same way as soon as they catch wind of it. In their mind, the idea is going to, you know, catch fire and sell like hotcakes. And of course, everyone hopes their product will take off like that, but the grand can be the enemy of the good. You should plan for typical growth, not just growth that is possible only, you know, if the stars align a certain way and Mars is in the second house and Hershey's is in the fifth house and whatever. Entrepreneurs, they have great faith in their product. You know, they have to have great faith in order to stay energized about a project that can last 18 to 24 months. That's pretty much how long it takes to get one of these products, you know, online and making money. But entrepreneurs assume that once the word is out, the product story will spread like a virus through emails and Twitter and blog posts. Everyone will see how great it is. Well, the reality is usually more mundane than that. Most products have a, you know, that's nice quality about them, but don't inspire users to dizzying heights of admiration. So it behooves the business planner to account for both ends of the spectrum. If your financing is so light that it only focuses on development and assumes the product or site will catch fire in the first year, you may have a rude awakening in store for you. You will probably need to sell folks on your product, no matter how compelling it is to you personally. The next item is one that I see so often that it's really almost disturbing to me. It has to do with the idea of a catch-22 situation and planning. Well, I call it planning for critical mass. And I see this played out over and over again. Let me explain what I mean. Many online products these days are really their connection ideas. You might have an idea to bring folks together for carpooling or to trade baseball cards or to coordinate babysitting, to sell vinyl records to each other or, you know, something else. The current internet buzz is all about community. Community sites like MySpace and Facebook and Twitter, wildly successful ways of bringing folks together and allowing them to, you know, make connections with each other. I use LinkedIn for business connections, a great site, and a very innovative product. Merchant Circle, Angie's List. All these sites focus around business, these last three focus around business, and they're all about kind of getting people connected with other people and providing a service where people who, you know, need the services of other people get kind of hooked up with them. Well, about 3 out of 4 ideas that come across my desk are hosted service ideas, and probably more than half of them are involve these like coordinating interaction between users of common interest, community sites. Well, the ginormous problem with services like these connection point services is what I like to call critical mass. Let's take as an example that a site that you create to allow users to buy and sell bobblehead dolls from each other, to trade or, you know, auction like or buy and sell, you know, whatever. So a user comes to your site and for a small fee, let's say $2.95 a month, they subscribe to the site and you take that fee and you also get a little piece of the transaction and you handle the escrow. So, you know, basically it's a way for bobblehead enthusiasts to come together and to find bobbleheads they want and to get rid of bobbleheads they don't want. Sounds like a great idea. A mini bobblehead, you know, eBay. So you spend a few months developing the site, naturally signing up with our crack team here at CF Web Tools, and then you launch. You have a great marketing plan. The word is out. Bobblehead believers know about your site and your service. Sounds like a recipe for success, doesn't it? Well, not necessarily. The problem is that folks just aren't going to pay money, even $2.95 a month, to be the first user, or even one of the first 100 users. They're going to wait until they see a reasonable number of folks trading before they jump in themselves. And of course, if most people feel this way, it's going to be very difficult to get any momentum. You will need users in order to get bobbleheads posted, and you will need bobbleheads posted in order to attract users. It's the critical mass issue. You need critical mass to make your site successful. Now, this is true of every user-to-user community site on the web. Even if all you have is a forum, you still need to reach critical mass to make it effective. So whatever you can do to get users on your site initially when you launch is going to be absolutely crucial. So here are some steps that I always recommend for customers with this sort of a problem. Number one, don't charge a fee. Don't charge a fee. At least don't charge a fee in the first year. You know, the big sticking point here is that fee. Even at $2.95, users will balk if they see no activity. No one's going to throw money at something that may or may not take off. So instead of charging, use, you know, all the free stuff, free trials and free membership for a year and free and easy registration and free N number of trades or free N number of sales or free. You have to make it painless. You have to make it easy to get users signed up. And that means foregoing whatever revenue your optimistic business plan projected for subscriptions in the first year or so. Make it free. Number two, pre-seed the user database. If possible, you know, find a partner with somebody who has a list of users who perhaps because of their interests are already great candidates for your service, and give all of them a free account, you know, and send them an email or send them a letter saying, you know, log in here and here's your username and password. Pre-seed the product database. In our example, the site owner could purchase several hundred bobbleheads and offer them for trades or purchases as, you know, being his own user or even as more than one user. Affiliations. Approach businesses with similar interests and make deals that benefit them in exchange for memberships to your application. Be patient. As stated earlier, the growth curve is often slow and steady. Yeah, you might have planned for 5,000 users a month, but you might only get 50 users a month for the first few months. Be prepared. Wait it out. You will only hit pay dirt if you let that critical mass build. And finally, consider a different model. You know, some subscription models are simply unworkable. If your revenue model is unrealistic, you know, like in our bobblehead example, the web is just simply full of free subscriptions to this and that. People are used to signing up for something and getting a username and a password for free. They're not used to paying for such things. So getting them to do so is difficult, and you have to have a really compelling application to cross that chasm and get them to do so. So consider opting for a different model altogether. Find a different way to bring a revenue stream online rather than the subscription service. The next issue is has to do with the question of why did you choose the web in the first place as your medium? So let's talk about this. I get a lot of ideas across my desk that come from folks who have chosen the web for a couple of reasons. And one of them, and I consider this to be sort of an ugly truth, one of them is cost. People bring their ideas to the web because they perceive a lower startup cost. Now, consider the cost of a retail location. You got to have a building, you got to have a point of sale system, you need full inventory, staffing, business hours, utilities, parking, customer service, advertising in the phone book, local paper, signage, circulars. Even a small store might cost you a few a few hundred thousand dollars to set up, right? So everyone grasps, when you're talking about a physical brick-and-mortar store, everyone grasps the cost of physical infrastructure and inventory. Now ask this question. Did you choose the web because a brick-and-mortar store was so expensive and you couldn't afford it, and therefore you chose the web because it was the only option available to you? In other words, is cost the primary factor for you aiming your application at the web? Or is it because you believe it's the right medium? If it's because it's cheaper, and I'm not downing that. I'm not saying that's the wrong way to go about it. I think there are many applications that are well suited for the web. And of course, the web is cheaper than a brick and mortar startup. But how much cheaper do you expect it to be? If a successful brick-and-mortar operation has a startup cost of let's say, $500,000, do you expect your web effort to cost 10% of that, 20%? Yeah, the web is cheaper. You can carry lower inventory, fewer staff. Your storefront is out on the big, wide world at large. But that doesn't mean you're going to be able to stand up a thriving and profitable website for $2,000 or $3,000. I routinely tell folks who have such expectations to abandon the idea of a custom application. You know, if they have something to sell, go to eBay, go to Yahoo. But if you want a unique custom product based on your, you know, bang up idea that you're excited about, you need to prepare your expectations to develop that product and to fund it and to test it and launch it and market it. And these costs, while they do not rival the cost of a brick and mortar operation, they are also not trivial costs. They require the same amount of planning and the same amount of financial fiduciary, you know, research as the brick and mortar store and approach. The second thing on this, in this kind of on the same vein, has to do with automation. Another thing I see is folks that they've chosen the web for the reason that you know, maybe they came out of retail or whatever, and they're just tired of the hassle of running a business and all the kind of dealing with customers and all that. And they have this idea that the web, they have this, you know, grand idea that they're going to create this application and the web is going to absolve them from the need to interact with customers. There's this kind of sense that you can build a product that, that runs itself, that's, you know, if it's constructed correctly, it's going to entertain a never-ending stream of folks with credit cards, and they sign up and they log in, and they just automatically know how to use your product because your product is so unique and intuitive. They don't have very many questions, you know, whatever questions they have are answered in a single-page FAQ page or your nifty screen capture videos that, of course, everybody loves to watch, right? The truth is, no site on the internet is immune from customer service issues. And I'd bet a key lime pie that if you talk to somebody at the right department at Google, I get a few thousand people a day who call them and ask questions like, I went to Google and I see this big text box and button and I just don't know what to do. Can you tell me what to do? Do I type in there? Do I click on the button first? What do I do? No interface. No tool ever devised, no suite of applications dreamed up in the bowels of Silicon Valley has ever come close to matching the bewilderment of the average user at large. You know, unless perhaps they are Apple users who don't ever admit they need help because Apples are, quote, so easy to use. These users will call you. They will email you. They'll text you. They'll chat with you. They'll even show up in your, at your door and ask you questions about your application. You can bet on it. So ask yourself this question. Am I expecting the web to absolve me of the need to interact with customers? If the answer is yes, get ready for a rude awakening. A wise planner will expect virtually any service-driven product to generate customer service issues. So I have a formula for, you know, CS, for customer service planning, and it is the complexity of your product, the cost that the user pays for it, the average age of the expected user as a multiple, so one for Gen X user or younger, two for boomers, three for senior citizens. So the effort you should expect to exert equals the level of complexity times the cost to the user times three multiplied by that multiple for the age of the user. In other words, and you can look at the blog post to see the formula in action, you'll get it. But if your service targets boomers or the elderly and it costs a lot, you will spend some time in customer service planning and you'll need to be patient. You'll need to have live people on the end of a phone. You'll need live chat. You'll need simple, straightforward help files that are written by folks who understand your demographic. You'll need to be flexible. You'll need to be accommodating. The more folks pay for a service, the more hand-holding they'll expect. And on the other hand, if your service is free, then email support may be sufficient. Yahoo, as an example, very little live help. You know, nobody complains because most things we do on Yahoo, sports and finance and search, they're free anyway. So, you know, they don't feel an obligation to reach out to users who are using their service without paying for it. So, finally, let me say... In the long run, whether or not your product succeeds, no matter how great and innovative, no matter how many I's you dot and T's you cross, whether your product succeeds is always going to be a little bit of a roll of the dice. Yes, you can exert some effort to eliminate possible failure points, but the truth is your success is going to be dependent on users who come to you and choose to use your product or don't choose to use your product. I'm reminded of a scene in the movie American President, an excellent movie starring Michael Douglas, Martin Sheen, and Annette Bening. Michael Douglas is playing the president, and he's complaining to his friend Martin Sheen, who is his chief of staff, that he wants to ask this woman, Annette Bening, who's playing a hot lobbyist, wants to ask her out on a date. And he tells, and Martin Sheen reminds him, as a political matter, that that dating a lobbyist might not be a great political idea. And he says, well, you know, I fail to see, Michael Douglas says, I fail to see how who I date is, you know, the business of the American people. And Martin Sheen character's chief of staff responds in a real succinct way and says, with all due respect, sir, the American people have a funny way of deciding on their own what is and what is not their business. And that is an excellent quote when it comes to fielding a new product on the web. There's a contrast between hopefulness, expectation, and the, you know, winds of fate. When it comes to making money on the web, users have a funny way of deciding on their own whether your application is the next Facebook or the next, you know, Friendster. So for those wanting to leverage its power, the web can often fall short of its promise. So that's it. That's what I have for you this week. Please read the blog post. Feel free to offer your comments there. Remember your guest on the blog post and keep your comments positive. But I look forward to sharing some more on these sort of topics in the near future. And hopefully we'll try to do one of these a week and get something going that's more regular for those of you who enjoy the podcast. So that's it for this week. Thank you and good night.